Hey, thanks for tuning into my podcast. This is Big Head on the Block, hosted by me, Tim Henderson, a.k.a. Big Head. Hey, welcome back to Big Head on the Block. Today's podcast, we're going to focus on how to dupe a criminal. Every now and then, you just have to be resourceful. You have to come up with something a little bit unique. You have to be quick-witted in order to get the upper hand and or the advantage on a criminal. Before we get started, I want to acknowledge the sponsor for this particular podcast, and it's Vicki Thomas with Justice for Justin. So thank you for the sponsorship, Vicki. So let's get at it. Now, back in the late 90s, we had a lot of stolen vehicles in the Scotlandville precinct area, which is 4th District. Now, I was pretty adept at finding these vehicles and chasing them. And listen, it was something that I was very passionate about. My father was killed in a stolen vehicle accident, right? A bad guy was in a stolen car and he was running from the police. So this has always been something that I was extremely passionate about. And I would spend many of the waking hours of my early part of my career with Baton Rouge City Police attempting to locate these stolen vehicles. Now, I don't want to over-exaggerate the amount of stolen vehicles I chased, but everybody who worked with me in that era, the late 90s up to 99, you know, they can verify these stories, man. It may sound like I'm embellishing things, but I can promise you I'm not. On several occasions, I had three stolen vehicle chases in the same day. So I averaged somewhere around 150 chases a year. I can't give you specific content, but I can tell you this. Once my supervisors went back and did some research to nominate me for Officer of the Year back in 97, they found, and if my memory serves me correct, they found that I was able to recover 50 to 60 stolen vehicles. So that's just the ones I was able to recover. And back then, we got outrun a whole lot. And the reason we got outrun is because we had inferior cars most of the time. In 1998, 99, I was driving what they called a turtle car, a Caprice, and it was extremely slow. And from having to stop at all the stop signs, red lights and all, I was at a severe disadvantage because these guys are running stop signs. I'm having to stop, and the acceleration in these turtle cars were awful. The Crown Vic, which was the car used most in that time frame, was a lot better when it came to being able to accelerate and keep up with these bad guys. But man, that Caprice put me at a severe disadvantage. So late 90s, the first one I'm going to tell you about is pretty funny. Now, I'm riding around, and you know the story about my dad because I've already told you. So I'm riding around, and I'm just playing around at night. It's probably a little bit after midnight, and I'm having a conversation with my father. I said, hey, I think that you're with me, but if you're with me, help me find a stolen vehicle. Now, y'all can make jokes if you want, but, you know, just a way of me engaging him and keeping his memory fresh in my mind. And look, I had been on a little dry streak. I had probably been 3 or 4 days without either chasing or apprehending a stolen vehicle and the suspects involved in the actual theft. So I said to my dad, if you're riding with me, let's go find us a stolen car. And guess what? Probably within the next 15 minutes, here it is. Bam. Game on. I find a stolen car. Chase ensues. I don't remember if I chased over the air or if I just tried to keep up with it, but these guys in this car were particularly fond of running every stop sign and driving in, you know, pretty much a reckless manner, just trying to avoid apprehension. Now, when I first saw them, I could tell it was four young black males that was in the car. Had no idea who they were. And as the chase continued, it was probably about a 3-minute chase. And as they came to a dead end, I don't think they knew exactly where they were going. They were from the area, but I think they just took a bad turn. So the street they turned on dead end into a 6-foot wooden fence. Well, as I'm pretty close to them now, I'm only a few car lengths behind. I was able to keep up with them pretty good. Well, as they stopped the car, they bailed out. All four of them hit that 6-foot wooden fence and climbed over. Well, knowing that I would never be able to catch them, I didn't have enough resources in the area to even, you know, put out, hey, they're running, blah, blah, blah. I picked up my PA, my microphone, and I said, "Driver, you know I know who you are. You better come back." And, you know, I just said that with pretty much no chance of this occurring. Well, lo and behold, here comes the driver climbing back over the fence. He actually came back thinking I knew who he was. I recognized his face for sure, but I had no idea until he came back over that fence who he was. It would have just been four random black males running. I would have never figured it out, but he was definitely the driver because I saw the clothes when he got out and I was able to pinpoint that. Well, the vehicle was stolen. It was recovered now and there was an arrest. And because he decided to come back over the fence, I gave him a juvenile custodial form for that reason and the fact that juvenile wasn't accepting people at that time. So, you know, it's one of those things where he never knew that I didn't know him. I acted like I did during the conversation. And I said, "I'm glad you came back, man, because I had to come to your house and get you," right? So that's just one of the little tricks of the trade. First time I had done it, first time it had worked, it may never work again, but it don't matter. It worked the one time I needed it to work. The next one I'm going to tell you about also happened late at night, probably somewhere around midnight again. Now, you know, back in those days, we stayed focused on targeting bad guys. So we out hunting our prey, right? We looking for the bad guys. The real bad guys are out on the streets. They're in these neighborhoods selling drugs and stuff late in the, you know, those are their prime hours. They don't have 9 to 5 hours. These are the hours that they operate. Okay. So if you're going to be an effective, proactive cop, you got to be out when they out and know how they hustle and how they move. Well, on this particular day, we had been briefed about a stolen vehicle. It was a Chevy Blazer and it was black with some red striping on it. So I paid attention at roll call. It was probably, roll call was at 2:45 or 3 p.m. in the afternoon. And this was, you know, 10 or 11 hours later when I spotted the vehicle. So I spot the vehicle. It turned on Cadillac Street. I was coming up Plank Road, so I was not in close proximity, but I'm like, that's got to be it. It was too unique of a design for it not to be it, right? So two black males exited the vehicle. I kept my eye on the driver, got his description, because you always need to focus on the driver, because back then you couldn't arrest the passenger. Now you can because the laws were changed. But back then you had to arrest the driver only, right? So I watched them exit the vehicle and walk to a house. Well, knowing that they'll go in the house and I won't have any reason to go up in the house, you know, I could have found probable cause to do it, but it really wasn't worth the energy and effort. I could have just recovered the vehicle, right? But once again, I get on my PA and the vehicle's parked in the street area, you know, kind of next to the grass at the house, which is how a lot of people park in these neighborhoods because there's not a lot of additional parking. So I get on the PA and the PA helped me again. I said, "Hey, driver, you need to come move this vehicle. It's illegally parked." Now, knowing it's a stolen vehicle, I had no idea that this knucklehead was going to listen to me or not listen to me, right? So eventually, he starts walking back to the vehicle. I radio back up and I said, "Hey, I got a stolen vehicle. I got the driver walking back to the vehicle." Now, I just needed him to pull it in the driveway and not take off again in it, right? He didn't know that I knew it was stolen because he came back to the vehicle, pulled it in the driveway. I exited the vehicle and had to encounter him, you know, by myself because there was no other backup close and I didn't want him to get back in the house. I was able to subdue him. Backup came. We made the arrest. He was placed in jail. We recovered the vehicle and the vehicle was returned to the owner. So that's two times that the PA worked. But you got to be slick, quick with it. Remember I told you, if I don't get on the PA and say this, he just walks in the house and, you know, game, set, match, it's over. The next funny one I'm going to tell you about is thanks to the late, great Ernie Rhodes. Ernie Rhodes was a man's man. He was a cop's cop. He was a supervisor who worked throughout the duration of his career, even when he made lieutenant and captain. And, you know, I trained under him when I first joined the department, and I really appreciated the fact that he backed his men. I appreciated the fact that he was very proactive, and he did what had to be done. He helped us control these streets with the things that he did and the mannerisms, right? So Ernie Rhodes, like I said, he's he's moved on to the next world. But as a result of him, I got this story. So early in the afternoon, like I said, we're on evening shift again. He works at a different precinct than me. He's at the First District Plank and Evangeline precinct. He gets in a car chase and I pay attention, but he loses the vehicle before we can get close to him. It's a small green vehicle, and he was very good and precise at giving descriptions. Now, he gave us a perfect description of this vehicle because he said the two fog lights that were in front, one of them were out. So you got a fog light that's out. You got a green vehicle. The plates were out of state. I don't remember what state it was. For some reason, I want to say Nebraska, but it's been a long time. He told us who was driving it, you know, as far as the description goes, but he lost it. So fast forward probably 6 or 7 hours, I'm sitting on Cadillac Street in Apperson with a canine officer, and we're sitting side by side blocking both lanes of the street. You know, there's nobody else out on the street at night, and we're just chatting. Well, all of a sudden, a vehicle pulls in behind me. I look in my rearview mirror, and I see a vehicle that matches the exact same description as the one that ran from Sergeant Ernie Rhodes earlier in the day, right? So this guy's been riding around in a stolen vehicle having a good old time. Well, randomly enough, the only two cars on the road are me and the canine. He pulls up behind me. Clearly, all the information that I have received earlier from listening to his chase, this is the vehicle. Two fog lights at the bottom. One of them's out. It's a green vehicle. It's got out-of-state plates because out-of-state, they'll have a plate on the front and the back in some of these states, right? So I think it was Nebraska or Texas or something. I don't remember the exact state. It's been too long ago. Well, I tell the canine officer because he realizes it at the same time I do. I said, look, I'm going to pull forward and I'm going to just, you know, mosey on out the way. And that way he doesn't get spooked and you know, try to run. Well, I drive. The canine officer is able to get behind him. The guy, he goes about 2 or 3 blocks and he bails out. The canine, which this is very impressive. The canine deployed from the front passenger window, and I'm sorry, the front driver window. And that was the first time I had ever seen that. I didn't anticipate it because I was still a young cop, and this was the first time I worked for a department with a canine division. So it's bad guy in a stolen car, canine behind him, me behind canine. And like I said, this was only several blocks. It wasn't a very long pursuit. So the guy takes off running, and I'm telling you, this guy can move. When I seen that dog deploy from the front window of the car, I was amazed, man. I was like, man, I got to do that job. That was so cool looking to see that dog deploy. So I get out of my car, and the dog's chasing him through a big open field, and I hear shoo, 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 shoo. That dog's putting everything he got into it. But I can tell you what, that guy was running. He was running because he didn't want to get dog bit. He made it from one side of the field to the other. The dog finally captured him. I think in canine terms, they call that an apprehension. Let me tell you what, I was impressed with the guy running. I was impressed with the dog. I was impressed with the dog, how he deployed out the car. And then going back many, many hours prior, I was impressed with Ernie Rhodes for giving such a good detailed description that allowed me and the canine officer to intercept this vehicle many, many hours later. Now, in this next story, this is a very annoying one because I didn't catch this knucklehead or knuckleheads. So there's a vehicle. I'm in the Avenues, which is, they call it the field. It's by Southern University. So I'm back in the Avenues patrolling, and it's daylight, so I don't know what time it is. I still worked a 3 p.m. to 1 a.m. shift, so I'm patrolling, and this is a high-crime, known drug area, right? So if you're out trying to be proactive, this is one of the areas that you're going to target it, and you target these people in these areas for quality of life issues for the citizens. You're trying to make this place as peaceful as it can be for these people to go about their day-to-day activities and enjoy life, right? Well, I see a vehicle. I make a traffic stop. I don't know that it's stolen at the time, but what I do realize is that the driver never put the vehicle in park, and you can see this when you're behind a vehicle, so young officers, pay attention. You'll see when they put it in park, it'll go past the reverse lights, and they'll click on briefly, and then it'll go in the park, right? I never saw the reverse lights, which indicated to me that whoever this was wasn't intent on allowing me to make this vehicle stop, right? So although they stopped, they never put their car in park. I gave them direction to get out. Now, I'm not going to get out of my car because I've already experienced this once or twice, and you're not going to keep duping me with the same deal. So I get on the PA, tell the driver, step back. He doesn't step back, and I said, driver, step back. Well, I'm running this car at the time as all this is occurring. I'm trying to find out real quick from our CIU unit if this is a stolen vehicle. And they come back and tell me it's a stolen vehicle out of New Orleans. So we still sitting there. He's not getting out. He's not committing one way or another. I tell the guys that I work with via the radio, I'm behind a stolen vehicle, several occupants. Well, it was an SUV, and there were four occupants. So the vehicle takes off, finally, and we probably stayed there a good minute or two. I'm not exactly sure of the time frame. Takes off, drives me through a few streets. Then he drives into an area that people use for a park, but there's nobody out there. It's just kind of vacant land. And they run into a ditch, and the vehicle's kind of tilted on the side. The driver goes to get out. Well, I see that he can't get out. I'm pushing my push bumpers right up against his doors to block him from getting out because he's the focus. I need to catch the driver. Remember I told you back then you had to catch the driver? The rest of the passengers are insignificant. You have to catch the driver. So he went to open the door. I pinned him in. The vehicle was on its side, tilted so much that the people on the passenger side had rolled down the windows and started crawling out. Now, they had to crawl out onto the ground. They couldn't step out because the doors were jammed down. So they crawled out the windows. All four of them get out before I can grab the driver. They all start running across the field. And, you know, I'm fleet of foot. I'm young, probably 27, 28 at the time. And I get behind them in a good foot pursuit. By the time my backup gets there, they have cleared a few streets, cleared an 8-foot fence, and they in the wind. We don't find them. So I go back to my car, and I'm pretty pissed off, you know, that I didn't get at least one apprehension. I'm happy that we're going to be able to recover the vehicle, you know, for the person who lost it in the auto theft in New Orleans. But I'm still pissed at not catching this driver. I'm really pissed at myself for letting him get away. It's a prey mentality, and it's like the cheetah chasing the gazelle. The cheetah misses the gazelle. He ain't eating today. You know, you like quality arrest, and that was a good quality arrest that I missed out on because I wasn't fast enough to catch these little knuckleheads. Now, my good friend, and I have mentioned him in the past, 4439 Troy Lawrence, he meets me back in my car. He drives me around and drops me back off at my car so I didn't have to walk back in shame. So I jumped on the hood of his car, rode back to the front. Then while we got there, he saw the makeup of what, you know, of how the vehicles were and everything. And he looked at me and he said, "Hey man." And I was like, "What's up?" He said, "Why didn't you just get in your car and drive around the field whenever they took off running?" And I said, "Okay, bro." He said, "That would have made the most sense, man, because you know you can't catch them." And I was like, "You know, you right, but my first instinct was to chase these knuckleheads." Now, what Troy said was, if I would have been smart and not got tunnel vision and focused on catching this driver, I could have outsmarted him, but I didn't. So if I would have gotten in my car, I couldn't have drove straight through the field because there was a big ditch. That's where they got stopped. But I could have just drove around the street to the next street. I could have probably kept them pinned inside the contained area. It was like basically two streets and a big open field. I could have probably kept them contained in that open field, you know, as opposed to chasing them and losing them. But hey, man, chalk it up. Bad guys got that one. I learned my lesson. And it's a lesson that proved valuable because there was many times throughout the rest of my career that I didn't give chase and I was successful because I stayed in my car and chased them while they were running on foot. Now, I gave you a few stolen vehicle stories, you know, just for some entertainment value. And I will say this, in my career, when I used to look for those stolen vehicles back in the day, my father had been killed in a stolen vehicle pursuit. He was an innocent bystander. And I did feel like he was riding with me when I was in those areas, man. I really did. And, you know, like I said, you can make fun, mock, you know, say whatever you want. But in my heart of hearts, I felt like he gave me an upper hand on catching these guys. I felt like he was with me riding, and not all the time, you know, only when I'm looking for stolen vehicles and it would pop in my mind, it would cross my mind. And the vast majority of the time I would catch these stolen vehicles. Was it divine intervention? I have no idea, but I can tell you right now, my dad was riding with me, whether you believe it or not, I believe it. Now we're going to transition back to something funny. I was extremely proficient in finding these stolen vehicles, right? And I had a cockiness about myself because I would tell people, I will find one. They ask me, how you find them all the time? I can't tell you all my secrets. But know this, I caught so many that there were times where, you know, people would be like, man, you lucky. Man, I don't know how you find all these stolen vehicles. And I'm like, first of all, luck has nothing to do with it. You have to put yourself in a position to be successful. Luck has nothing to do with it. If you're not out and about looking, you ain't going to find them, right? And then you have to know what to look for. That's instincts. Instincts are very helpful in the police world. So that being said, I moved to a different precinct in the late 99, just before 2000. So when I first got to the shift, I realized that the makeup was a little bit different. They had a bunch of guys on this squad who liked to clown around. You know, they did their job and everything, but they liked to have fun. They like to do nefarious things to each other. So when I got there, the thing that I talked about was the stolen vehicles, the chases and such. Well, I teamed up with a few people and you know, I would look for stolen vehicles because that's what I really liked to do. I like to catch drug dealers, make arrests, chase stolen cars. You know, it was something that I spent a majority of my time hoping to get in a police pursuit, right? It's just something that that was me. That was me, period. Well, we had a couple of guys on the squad that were a little bit senior, and they were pranksters. So one day, you know, they would ask me, how many car chases did you get into? And I would tell them, and this went on for a couple of weeks, you know. I'd have my chin up, my chest out when I'm telling these stories, you know. I did lose a lot of vehicles, so I lost more than I caught, let me put it that way. But I was still proud of the fact that I made these apprehensions and I got in these chases because every cop likes a good car chase. Well, I told these stories for a couple of weeks and man, they all sound intrigued. So, you know, like I said, chin up, chest out. I'm telling these stories, proud. Well, a couple of weeks later, I'm getting mail out of my mailbox, which is located inside the precinct. And of course, everybody's there for roll call. So everybody sees me get it out. I open the letter. It's from the auto theft division. And I'm like, I've been wanting to go to auto theft because I was pretty good at finding these stolen cars and making arrests. So I'm thinking, hey, maybe, you know, maybe it's something to do with that. Now, the auto theft division had thought enough of me and my abilities to locate stolen vehicles and apprehend suspects that they wanted me to put on a class. So, of course, I was like, man, that's pretty profound, man. Here I am, a three, four-year guy on a job, and they're asking me to put on a class. Now, I'm as happy as can be. You know, I tell all my friends, I'm like, hey, man, auto theft contacted me. They want me to put on a class. They gave me a designated date a couple of weeks later, you know, so my squad's like, man, that's pretty cool, bro. You know, you get to do all that. And, you know, everything's good, man. I'm proud. I'm out working, knowing I got a couple of weeks till I put on this class. Then I start thinking about, you know, what I want to talk about, how I want to address the class and give them some insight as to, you know, what I look for, my knowledge of everything involving stolen vehicles. So about 3 days prior to the actual class, I called the auto theft division to see what I should wear and to know if I need to, you know, put on a presentation, you know, a visual presentation, or should I just come in and talk and just give the class in that capacity? Because like I said, I was young, 3 or 4 years on the job. I definitely was under 30. I just don't know exactly what my age was. Well, when I called one of the detectives, and I think it was Terry Bro at the time, she told me, you know, that she wasn't aware about the particular class I was putting on. She would get with her superiors and, you know, she would find out all the information that I needed in order to put on a class. Well, I hung up with her and I waited for a return call. And eventually I did get a return call. I don't remember if it was the same day or the next day. But when she called me, she asked me where the letter originated from. And I told her it had been placed in my mailbox. You know, it was a letter. And back then we all got letters in our mailbox. Anything interdepartmental didn't come on email system. It came via an actual letter, right? Any kind of letter or transfers or stuff. So I told her where I got it from. And she indicated to me that the commander of the division was asked about this. Even though it had their signature on it, they had no knowledge of it. And I said, well, I don't understand. I said, you know, I'm supposed to be there in like a few days. I'm just trying to get some clarification on what I need to do. And she said, you're missing the point. And I'm like, what's the point? I'm ready to teach. And she said, the point is somebody on your squad or somebody else played a joke on you. Nobody in the auto theft division knows anything about you putting on a class, nor does anybody have any desire for you to put on a class. And I'm stunned. I'm like, what? I'm like, I'm looking at the letter. And she basically was like, welcome to the world of BRPD practical jokes. You have been duped by people on your squad. So I didn't say anything right away because I was, as they say, butthurt, right? And I was like, man, I really want to put on this class because I thought I was an expert in identifying stolen vehicles and capturing these suspects. And now I'm finding out that this was a practical joke. So when I got back to roll call, I don't remember exactly how it was handled, but I think I physically threatened everyone on the squad. And I told them if I find out who did it, it's probably going to be some broken jaws involved. You know, I really wasn't that mad about it. I was a little hurt, though, because I really wanted to put on this class. But look, I got duped. And if you listen to some of my practical jokes from earlier podcasts, you'll see this is in line with everything else. So after many years of getting these bogus letters, you learn to figure out that if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. But look, it was a lesson learned. And the second district evening shift, and the senior guy was Sean Baxley, and I don't know that he had anything to do with it, but if I was a betting man, I'd bet that he did. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Big Head on the Block. I'm Tim Henderson, the host. I look forward to dropping another podcast soon. Please give us any comments, likes, dislikes, or any topics y'all would like to discuss. Thank you.